It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Undrafted, a Dynasty Game Theory podcast brought to you by the Undroppables. I am your host, Scott Belanger, a.k.a. Jax Falcone. You can find me on Twitter at Dino Game Theory. This is episode number 175. Let's roll and welcome to the program, people. Those that know that I'm going to have a pretty awesome show today. A very, very special presentation of the Undrafted today, as we are going to unveil and show some skin. We're going to take the towel off. We're going to take the towel off and show the listeners our model body, right? We're going to show it. It's all coming today, and I want to do that with my friend and new Undroppables member who is part of the creation of our wide receiver score model. I'm going to bring him right out. We're going to get started. But Mr. Dan Wisner, the Wiz, gaining popularity at a breakneck pace. And for all the right reasons, my good friend and partner, Dan Wisner, joins us. Welcome to the program, my friend.
Jax, thank you, man. Appreciate it. Fun to be back on here. And really excited to kind of talk through something that we've been working on the past few months, right? I think there's been a lot of excitement building and really excited to kind of share it with, you know, the people here. So
absolutely.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You know, what's funny is that we've all been working on this for much longer than a couple of months or a few months. You've been working on it by yourself. Jay has been working on this by himself. Me and Chalk have been working on it by ourselves. And we found each other. That's what we did. You know, I mean, it's interesting because, you know, Chalk and I started the Undroppables. Well, he started it and quickly asked me to join. But we started the Undroppables years ago. And, you know, 175 episodes into this, I do one once a week. You do the math. I don't know how long it's been. You know, 4 or 5 years of doing some sort of content with the Undroppables. And Chalk and I had always felt like we wanted to come up with something that, you know, was predictive, right? And so, you know, we weren't necessarily able to do that. It's not that we didn't kind of know what inputs, but we weren't, you know, coders. We weren't, you know, we weren't those guys. And so bringing in Jay, obviously, was a huge deal. Chalk's friend brings in his buddy, FF Coder, to come in and help us so that we can really run the right tests and do the right sort of correlation tests to understand what it was that we were looking for. So all of our brilliant ideas could be tested for their efficacy. And, you know, you come into the party bringing a very, very diverse skill set. Able to, you know, sort of speak to that side, but also the front side and help me do this show. So I appreciate everybody's contributions, and it's a long time coming, and I'm so proud of the work that we did, and I'm grateful for it. So thank you. And, you know, what do you think of all that?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, appreciate the kind words first off. I think it's a really great point when you kind of phrase it up and kind of lay the land, right? As far as this is something that I think each of us were talking about or thinking about in some manner. But I think really getting hooked up with each other, you know, let's call it right after the new year, right? Like shortly after I joined you on Droppables. And then again, I think you mentioned him, but, you know, none of this could have been done without, you know, FF Coder, Jay, right? I think he's just been someone I want to make sure that everybody understands, you know, obviously he's not able to be on the pod today, but this is a guy that really has been like the backbone of everything that we've been doing when it comes to this model. So, you know, shout out FF Coder there. It's again, I think we've had the conversations about what's important to us, right? I think that's where we started. And looking at how to build something out from a model perspective, talking to Jay, looking at correlations, and then finding out how all those pieces fit together. And I think kind of the results bear some of that fruit, Jax. And I think that's something that as we kind of go through these conversations today, and, you know, for some of the listeners out there, you'll kind of see like our process seems to be kind of playing out here. And I think we're really excited to kind of share it and discuss it with you guys.
It was as if me and Chalk were like living in the woods and we had this vision of this mansion we wanted to build, but we didn't have any arms. So we're out there in the woods. We've got this beautiful vision, but we don't have arms. And then along comes FF Coder and we're just like, hey, can you build a mansion? And he's like, yeah, can't you? And we're like, no arms. Can you do it? And he's like, sure. And so he builds the mansion. So really he did it. But, yeah, you know, it's our mansion. I mean, we did tell him to do it. So, I mean, at the end of the day, that's where we come in. We're basically the guys that told him, go ahead and do that. And he did everything, man. He is so valuable to the team. He has arms. I mean, that's a big difference between he and I. Armless Jax Falcone, hopeless, building a model by himself. But it's legitimate. It's real. And it's because of him that it has legitimacy, in my opinion, because, you know, he was able to really help us get it done. Enough waxing poetic. I did want to get those thanks out there and those little, you know, those things said, because they must be said. But the real fun part was our discovery together, right? Was sort of, so let's start at the very beginning, which is kind of funny a little bit, because I've seen some people posting on Twitter like they came up with these metrics, which is, I even said it to you. You know, there was a metric that I thought of, right? There's one. It's not in the model. It was a metric that I thought of. It was like adjusted team, adjusted yards per team pass attempt that would control for team and stuff like that. And I had this whole thing. I'm like, I'm sure I didn't invent it. I said, I'm sure someone else has used it. I've just never seen it. Doesn't mean that I fucking invented it. So, I mean, obviously the hubris to think that you invented a metric out there. God bless you, people. But, you know, we were using a lot of these metrics for a long period of time without necessarily knowing their correlation, their efficacy, how much we should balance them out. So that was kind of the first thing, was looking at each thing individually, kind of thinking what was important. We'd look at certain players. Hey, what did these players do well, right? Because if you see a player that does something well, and then he also becomes successful, maybe there's something there. So we really did a lot of work in that regard. Maybe you can speak to that a bit.
Yeah, no, I think that's kind of really how it started, right? Is I think we had some, you know, we'll kind of go through some of those here in a minute from a, you know, what's in the model sort of perspective. But I think working back is really a good way to phrase up how we started, Jax, because, you know, in talking to Coder when we started, it's like, all right, let's find some, we know what we like, right, in certain guys, but now what guys do it well, right? Like, do we need at least a common group to start with? Let's call it a focus group, right? We need a focus group to see, all right, so who's doing this well? And if we like some of the things that some of the great guys are doing well, okay, then maybe we're on to something and now we can kind of move to that next step sort of thing, right? So one of the things that we did was, you know, really we kind of focused 2018 and up from a draft class perspective, and we started working our way back as far as looking at some of the hits in the NFL. And just for, so everybody knows, we can start kind of here. We classified a hit as having a top 24 wide receiver season, right, within your first 2 to 3 years. So that way you at least kind of understand what we're working with from a hit perspective. But yeah, I think that's working backwards and finding that group that, look, these are the guys that do stuff well, and then starting to weed out below it, Jax, is a great way to kind of phrase it up.
Yeah, and we started to look at things that we kind of always thought had some correlation, you know, yards per route run, things like that. You know, we tried to dig deeper, obviously, and we had a lot of things in the model, and we'll get to some of those things later. But I think the thing that got us most excited is that we didn't really solve for any players. As you'll see as we go through this, there were players that don't score very well that, oh well, not much we can do about it. We did want to stick to our principles in terms of what we thought was important. And when we did, you know, I remember the first time we sort of ran it for real, so to speak, Justin Jefferson was wide receiver 1 out of 180 players. And we're like, it worked, you know, and it sort of like, we're like, wow, you know, this kind of did it, you know. And, you know, yeah, we shaved the edges a little bit, but the first really iteration of what we thought, you know, in terms of kind of balancing everything together, you know, worked. I mean, that was kind of the high five moment that we had, no?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think one of the things that was really cool, Jax, was not only was Jefferson number one, right? Our top three coming out of the initial run through of the model was Jefferson, CD, and Chase. Right. So, you know, kind of seeing that and like seeing dynasty wide receiver one, two, and three right now in basically any order is Jefferson, CD, and Chase. That was also pretty exciting stuff as well.
So, you know, now we've gotten to the point where we have, you know, I would say we smoothed it out. We didn't really tinker very much, as a matter of fact, because we really felt like everything was in place for it. So now here we are. And I want to tell the people what the model did in terms of identifying past hits and past misses and the sort of where the score lies. So I would just ask, you're free to also sort of mention a few of the highlights of some of the metrics that are in there. I'm sure people are curious. So if you don't mind telling us, I'm going to start talking a little bit. I'm going to let you tell the story a little bit. All right. But I'm going to have you tell us a little bit about what's in it. You know, 30,000 foot view. Don't give them the sweet sauce yet. Don't give them the secret ingredients, but, you know, in general, you know, what we looked at and what are some of the big parts of the model and why maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you kind of look at, so a lot of the stuff, just so everybody knows, we used a combination of, you know, the stats on PFF from a college database perspective, and then some other stats that aren't necessarily PFF related, right? So, you know, you're talking receptions per team pass attempt, you're talking EPA per team pass attempt, and stuff like that. So, you know, we've got PFF reception grade in there. And just so, again, just for some clarity here, we wanted to use career average. This was a big discussion for us in the beginning of the model was, do we use best season? Do we use, you know, best, do we use first and second season or something like that, right? But one of the things that we found as we went through this was that, look, career average kind of spoke to the best from a identifying those best guys perspective. So everything that you're going to hear right here, as far as what's in the model, we use from a career average perspective, right? So you've got PFF receiving grade in there, you've got yards per route run in there, you've got zone yards per route run, you've got man yards per route run. We threw PPR points per game in there as well.
Yes.
Adjusted yards per team play, EPA per team pass attempt,
yeah.
EPA per play, and then reception yards per game and reception TD yards per game.
Yeah, I mean, basically looking at a player's efficiency, yards per route run, yards per team pass attempt, EPA, first downs, like a lot of stuff that basically goes into that. We've got a couple other things that really helped us with some of the misses, and we'll get to that a little bit later. When we did this, though, you're right. The top of the list was those three players was Jefferson, Chase, and CeeDee. Actually, it was Jefferson, CeeDee, then Chase. But they're in literally a 98th percentile. They're three out of 180. So to me, that says it works. But that could just be sort of obvious. You know, it was the next sort of group, and the next two groups, if you really want to look at it. I feel like there's two groups, and there's a 93rd percentile, and basically we sort of manipulated the score to be on a 100-point scale just so it was more sort of, you know, uniform or more user-friendly for that matter. But, you know, of course, the scores were not on a 100-point scale based off of how the model spit out the math. But we simplified it. And ultimately, you know, above a 90% is basically – above a 90 score is above basically 98th percentile – of all prospects, above an 80 is still a 93rd percentile prospect in our model. You know, only about 7% of the prospects fit into above an 80. So it's not like an 80 is a B score, really. It's an A plus, man. You're a very, very solid prospect at that particular point. Above a 70 is 85th percentile. Still very good. Again, you know, so we sort of outlined somewhere in there, there's some drop-offs. We think 80 definitely marks an elite tier. And when we look at that elite tier, when we look at who scored, and we can go in order, buddy. You want to tell the fine people how that sort of played out, the top who score over 80?
Yeah, yeah. So I think, look, let's start at the top. Exciting. Just let's start at the top because it is kind of fun talking about some of these names here. And just keep in mind, right? You know, some of these guys that are in here, really just one or two, they're still in their first season. They've still only played one season, right? So we don't know necessarily yet if they're a miss or a hit.
Right.
But we've got Jefferson coming in at number one, CeeDee Lamb coming in at number two at 92.8. You know, you've got Chase tied with him, right, at 92.8 as well. JSN comes in at 90.1. So really, really nice score for JSN. Just from an analytical perspective, which is obviously what this model is based on, he knocked it out of the park on a lot of metrics here. Another Ohio State guy coming in here at number five, which is Chris Olave, 89.95. You've got Jerry Jeudy coming in tied at number six with Jordan Addison. That's 89.2. You've got Devontae Smith coming in at 87.4. Drake London, 86.5. Garrett Wilson, 84.88. Brandon Ayuk, 82.
I mean, getting Brandon Ayuk in here is a very big win for the model because, you know, we weren't sure, and it's great to see him there. And then, of course, keep going. We've got some other doozies.
Yeah, no, I think it's funny you say that because Ayuk's one of the ones where, look, I said a lot of names that everybody was high on just there, but seeing Ayuk exactly. kind of grouped within these names and then how his career has kind of played out, you know, seeing how Matt Harmon's been in on him from the jump and just seeing what he's done there has been really nice to see. AJ Brown, 81.1. And then the last over 80 guy here is Tank Dell at 80.32, which was arguably the one that we might have been the most excited about, Jax, right?
Yes. Yeah, we were celebrating the Tank Dell. And of course, Puka did pretty well as he falls into that next bucket. You know, and that's after draft capital. So Puka was a higher prospect score, but, you know, of course, fifth round capital does not help because there's draft capital in the model. But, you know, by seeing that, you'd be like, wait a second, Puka basically scores right next to a guy like Amon-Ra St. Brown, who was also a fourth round draft pick. So you start going, wait a second, pretty amazing. But above that 80, if we can get back to it, you know, Tank Dell, AJ Brown, Brandon Ayuk, Garrett Wilson, Drake London, Devontae Smith, Jordan Addison, Jerry Jeudy, Olave, JSN, and the big God three. Unbelievable when that happens because, you know, in that group is Tank Dell, which you'd think, you know, pre-draft, God, this thing is broken. You know, it's got Tank Dell right next to AJ Brown. What are you, crazy? And sure enough, he goes out and posts one of the best rookie seasons we've seen on a fantasy points per game level. He scored 15 or so fantasy points per game as a rookie. Unbelievable. So, you know, anything over an 80 appears to be a hit. Really, the only non-hit is, well, JSN to be determined. And I guess Jerry Jeudy, who just got paid $41 million. So somehow or another, that might even turn around. But Jerry Judy's the one on there that you kind of go, well, I guess we got to live with Jerry Jeudy. But that's a pretty good top tier.
I mean, and speak to the fact, Jax, that Jeudy still had a top 24 season, right? I think he was wide receiver 22 his third year in the league. So, look, it's not drafting Jeudy where he was drafted. Obviously, it's not what you want to see, but it's also not like he's been a total whiff either, right?
Right.
And I think one of the big reasons why you're seeing a lot of these guys is one of the metrics that is also in the model is, you know, first downs per route run. Like that's part of the reason why you're seeing the list play out the way it does is because, you know, that's one that we identified kind of from the jump and something that we put some emphasis on.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And then when you get to that next group, I think it's probably 70 through 80. Again, that is another, you know, 70 through 80 is almost like the same number of players as you'll find from 80 to 100. You know, it's not a deep tier in terms of a lot of players. It's still an elite tier, if you will. And there's going to be some misses in this group. But what we find is that these are all players that you could find a reason to like them or not. But there's no real bombs in here. Maybe one is what I would find. In here that was, a couple of huge bombs maybe, but even still, for me, I think it's a really strong group and I really like it. Do you mind if I go ahead? It's Marquise Brown, Calvin Ridley, George Pickens, Jalen Waddle, Jahan Dotson, Rashee Rice, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Puka Nacua, T. Higgins. Now that is 72 or more, and we identified that 72 as definitely a spot where from there up, you know, when you put those guys along with the top, you know, the top 80 plus scorers, 72 and up is an absolutely amazing group of players with so few misses that you're really looking at guys like Jahan Dotson and Jerry Jeudy or whatever. Like, you know, it's just, it's so, so good. So 72 and up really gives you a pretty dang strong group of players. It does also get guys like Puka Nacua and Amon-Ra, who are later round picks. Just incredible. Just incredible. I absolutely love it.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things, Jax, that got us excited, right? Was because, yes, it's doing its job at the upper tier and nailing those kind of those absolute smash guys, but also doing a really nice job at identifying guys that maybe not did or maybe didn't get that draft capital, but hey, look, we still have them more highly ranked, right? And I think there's a couple different ways to look at this, right? Like, discussing it all together is very beneficial, and I'm glad we're doing it this way. But I think really when you'll start to be able to contextualize it a little bit more, like as we go class by class and really see kind of the value of what this has done, is not only identifying some of the hits that we've talked about so far, but really also using a phrase, you know, kind of that you've used in the past here, Jax, is avoiding some of the landmines, right? Like, that's what we're trying to do here, is avoiding some of the landmines. So,
yeah, let's do that. Let's talk about some landmines, because I think that's what we get when we go class by class, and we can do a little bit of talk class by class, certainly starting with that 2020 class, which was obviously very strong. You know, we would be looking at, you know, going into that draft with Jefferson as our wide receiver one. Even just having that and having him as like this elite score, that's huge.
Oh yeah, absolutely, Jax. I mean, I think kind of seeing him play out that way, because I remember, you know, I was kind of getting into Dynasty a little bit more at that time, you know, kind of going back to that 2020 draft, but it wasn't necessarily true consensus that I don't think, at least, that Jefferson was the wide receiver one coming out, right? So seeing it play out this way in our model is something that's nice to see.
Absolutely. I mean, I had CeeDee Lamb as wide receiver one over Jerry Jeudy. That would have been a thin victory because it was 92-89, but still, he would have been in that elite tier. But it would have, what it would have given us, though, is such a compelling argument to have Jefferson over the likes of, you know, Henry Ruggs and Jalen Reagor. Jalen Reagor scores basically at a 60, which is starting to become trouble. You know, there's hits and misses in the 60s. It's not necessarily where you want to be. Certainly 65 and up, I think, is a bit of a different category. You know, we sort of look at it like kind of like 90 and up, 80 and up, 72 and up, and 65 and up. That's kind of where we see some of the buckets form. Below 65, it's really a crapshoot. Excuse me. Like the Michael Jordan flu game. I'm coughing and muting myself as I cough. God bless me. Technical difficulties. Yeah. I'm like, I'm unbelievable right now. I'm on fire. But you know, Jalen Reagor would have been, you know, in this deal would have been, where is he? Wide receiver 14 post draft. Denzel Mims, who I was high on incorrectly, would have been wide receiver 21. Right? I would have just been like, I guess I'm wrong about Mims. I'm going to just forget about Mims, and I would have been rewarded. If I'd have just given up on Reagor, I'd have been rewarded. You know, all that. So even Bryan Edwards, wide receiver 12. These were some of the big names heading in there. So you would have drafted Michael Pittman over Bryan Edwards in that second round. Michael Pittman ended up at wide receiver 10. Not too bad. Tyler Johnson, we still would have missed on his ass, I guess. But he was still only wide receiver 7. But that top five, Jefferson, Lamb, Jeudy, Ayuk, Higgins. Absolute rock solid top five. And so it would have nailed that class. And it would have absolutely helped us miss the big time landmines in Reagor and Mims and Bryan Edwards, etc.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I think you kind of said it to start, Jax, but look, this is just one piece of the puzzle, right? So obviously there's the film evaluation that you're kind of going through during your draft process, and really kind of just everything that happens after the combine, leading up to the draft and everything like that. But if you went into, like, say you're going through your film process, right? And you're like, look, I'm really high on this guy. And he comes in, for example, like a Denzel Mims at 21. Maybe it really does make you take a closer look. It doesn't mean you have to move Denzel Mims down to 21 if you had him previously up there. But what it does is it makes you think about, okay, I need to go back and either watch some more film or, you know, just maybe second guess what I'm looking at here, right? So I don't want this to come across as, look, take this for exactly what it is, but maybe just helps you recalibrate some things and open your eyes a little bit on some guys. And I think as we kind of get into, you know, when we had more contested catch data from 2021, 2022, and 2023, you will see how this model does kind of open up your eyes to some guys that definitely were not in some top fives or even top tens these last couple of years.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'd be remiss to say that in that 2020 class, we had we missed on a hit who then became a miss, which is just amazing. Serendipity is the second to last rated player in that draft class at like a 52, which is just basically zero. At a 52 was Chase Claypool, who was kind of a first 2 year hit somehow or another, but really wasn't very good. It's actually very serendipitous that he ends up being so low in the 2020 class. Just kind of fun stuff to see in that 2021 class. Honestly, it's the same thing. It's amazing, actually. The 2021 class, a lot of guys, you're really just the one superstar over 90, one guy in the 80s, right? And then, you know, a slew of guys over the 65, whatever. Two guys over the 72 range, right? So we look at it, the one guy over 90, wide receiver one, Ja'Marr Chase. Great. Elite prospect, turns out to be right. The guy, the only guy in the 80 range, turns out to be Devontae Smith. Kind of a pretty good call. And then the two guys in that 72 and up range at wide receiver 3 and 4 was Waddle and Amon-Ra. Then sneaky wide receiver 5, Nico Collins. Unbelievable. Nico Collins. You know, guys way down there, Terrace Marshall, right? Whoopsie Daisy. Kadarius Toney, way down there. Even Rashad Bateman, wide receiver 10. All these guys kind of fall to the bottom, and you'd have felt compelled to draft Nico Collins and felt compelled to pass on Terrace Marshall. Damn it, that's great. You know, so it really does kind of do its job in a lot of ways. I mean, obviously there's going to be some irregularities once you get sort of out of that elite tier. Guys are just thrown together. Marquez Stevenson and Terrace Marshall are together. I don't know, what do you want to do with that information? Who cares? You're probably passing on both of them, so it doesn't matter. So that's the beauty of it. It's just such a great, great tool to see how it works, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is where, you know, obviously kind of nailing the order of that 2020 class is definitely where we started to get excited. But I think where it really started to open our eyes was having a guy like Amon-Ra come in at number 4 in this 2021 class, and also avoid guys like, you know, I think Elijah Moore was a pretty high prospect or a pretty high model guy, right? Going back to kind of that draft. I know he was up there for quite a few people. I think Rashad Bateman was also, you know, quite high on many people's boards as well. So kind of have guys like, to have guys like Amon-Ra and Nico above the guys that maybe if you looked on Twitter at that time may have been higher, or those guys were lower than consensus on guys like, you know, Elijah and Bateman. That's really nice to see.
Yeah, exactly. No, it really is amazing. To round that out, it was basically, you know, Amon-Ra, then Nico, Elijah Moore, Diami Brown, Rondale Moore. You probably were missing, you know, Rondale. I guess you were really, the point of the matter is that most of the spots, you were drafting the right player. You know, you're taking Ja'Marr because he's a stud, you know, maybe a little bit higher because he's like the third best or second best score of all time in the model. So, you know, maybe you're drafting him over Kyle Pitts or something like that because of this information. So in any event, it really works. What about 2022?
Yeah. So 2022, much thinner group of wide receivers here. When you kind of look at how this breaks out, but it's funny, you know, I think there was always consensus, right, coming out of that draft where there was the three, right? It was Olave, you know, Wilson, London, in any particular order, right?
And they were not close.
They were close, right?
Yep.
And then when you look at ours, I think a lot of people might be surprised the fact that we had Olave at one, because I think going back, at least from kind of what I've seen, and Jax, you can kind of jump in here and see if I'm correct me if I'm wrong, but I think looking back, whether it was London's age / prospect profile coming out or just Garrett Wilson being a bit splashier, doing things a little bit better from a yards after catch perspective than Olave, I noticed, and if you look at the draft capital, it would have kind of said the same thing, right? You had London go one, you had Wilson go two, and then you had Olave kind of go three out of those three, right? So I think it's interesting when you look at ours that we had Olave one at just under 90. We had Drake London 2 at 86.5 and then Garrett Wilson 3. So you had three guys above 80. In the group of 70s, you had three guys. So you had George Pickens, Jahan Dotson, and a name I found interesting here was Jameson Williams. You know, obviously he went the highest out of the bunch, right? When you look at kind of where those guys were drafted, and yet we had him as wide receiver six.
Yeah, exactly. And it would have, and Treylon Burks falls into that 60 category. He's wide receiver eight, and you would have missed him. Sky Moore, wide receiver 10, even with all of his sort of quote unquote metrics, his early breakout, you know, early declare, small school dominance, the rest of it, you know, we do look at some of that stuff, and he fell in this model. So really just kind of taking away Treylon Burks and Sky Moore from you in the first round. If you remember, it was basically London, Wilson, and Burks as the 1-2-3. And then it was Olave, you know, Sky Moore, Jameson Williams, Pickens. And so had you picked Pickens over all of them, that would have been a win as well. And even Dotson for some, you know, I mean, Dotson was okay. He's kind of a miss in this thing, I think. But like, gosh, what a miss on the margins, because everything is just so, so good. You know, Olave, London, and Wilson would have all been in that 80 category. And you could have chosen between them. And at that point, you would have probably prioritized London and Wilson and then Olave later in the first where his ADP was. So again, you would have had the right guys in the right spots. Pickens in the early second, you know, so you'd have had literally all four of those guys in a lot of situations based off how the draft board falls, or maybe one of the first two, but just absolutely awesome again in 2022.
Yeah, and I think it's a good way to phrase it up. And one quick note on Sky Moore, right, Jax, I think is some of the additional factors that we took into the model. We do have adjustments in there for Power Five, right? We do have adjustments in there for early declare, non-early declare. Yep. And we do have conference adjustments in there, right? So yep. Those are three things that, you know, when Jack says, hey, we take into account small school production, everything like that, those are some of the things that we've taken into account. Obviously, everything's weighted a certain way, but we wanted to make sure that, look, just because you're from a small school and putting up huge numbers, that you're not getting too much credit for that, right? We want to make sure that everybody's credit's kind of spread out evenly. But yeah, Jack, I think 2022 is another.
We don't want to take away guys that are in the next draft class, like Puka Nacua, who did play at a bigger school at one point, and Tank Dell. So you got to be – that's right. You can't just kill all these guys. You have to have it on a scale and decide how much to put in there. But, you know, we really feel like this nails it. So, yeah, that's unbelievable. It's super cool. And in the 2023 class, more of the same, as it is really, really cool. I think the only guy you probably would have missed out on in this – with this would have been Zay Flowers, as he falls just outside that 65 range, eh?
Yeah, I mean, and look, slightly below it. But the thing is, when you look at the list of names above him, at least from a year one perspective, they, like 90% of that list above him outperformed or was a clear-cut higher-rated prospect, right? So I think when you look at – this is probably our proudest moment of like how this kind of grades out from a model perspective, was the 2021 or 2023 class, sorry, right? So you've got JSN coming in above 90. So there's your kind of that one elite score here. When you look at the 80s, still only two, right? So Jordan Addison, 89.2, great score for him. You had Tank Dell coming in at 80.32. So the guys in the 70s, Rashee Rice and Puka Nacua, right? So when you look at the top five and you've got a 3, 4, and 5 of Tank Dell, Rashee Rice, and Puka Nacua, that is something where we kind of took a step back and said, all right, we nailed the top end of this with Jefferson, CD, and Chase, but now we've also got a top five in a given draft class of Tank Dell, Rashee, and Puka. I think we've fucking found something here. Jax, I think you would probably agree.
Yeah, and then the next three, Jaden Reed, Mims, and Flowers, you know, pushing Quentin Johnson the hell out of there. Jalen Hyatt falls farther down. You know, it was so good to see it just absolutely nail it. It was really cool. Pushing Quentin out and even Demario Douglas, you know, at wide receiver 15, I mean, you know, you're probably not drafting him, but, you know, he did come in above even guys like Kayshon Boutte, et cetera, you know.
Well, another good example of that too, Jax, is I think when you look at, you mentioned Quentin Johnston quickly, but, you know, everybody with him tied to Herbert. And look, going back, if I think back to where I was last year, yeah, I was much higher than Quentin Johnston as opposed to wide receiver 12, which is what he would have came in at here. But if I maybe would have seen this before, probably would have taken a second look if there was that big of a disparity. If, like, say I had him at wide receiver 3 and he comes in at wide receiver 12 for us, right? But I think one of the other names that was pretty interesting, you know, this is where you can tell that draft capital isn't a massive component for us, is because a guy like Jonathan Mingo, right, who was an early day 2 pick for the Carolina Panthers, we had him at wide receiver 25 in this model. And you know who was one spot ahead of him was Dontavian Wicks, right? So I think, you know, that was kind of interesting to see as well, Jax, looking back at that.
Yeah, absolutely. And none of those guys are paying too much dividends. I guess Dontavian Wicks is okay, but I mean, at the end of the day, we're certainly happy to have Jonathan Mingo down there as well as a clear fade. He was a clear fade sort of by the general eye test. But yeah, just going through this and seeing how, you know, how much the 90 plus prospects just dominate, how much all the 80 plus prospects were hits. The 72 and more are almost all, you know, NFL worthy hits. And then sort of, you know, sprinkling away from success, and then almost all the guys lower down there are misses, and some of them were highly drafted and highly regarded. Treylon Burks and Quentin Johnson, all these guys, N'Keal Harry, all would have been completely avoided with this model. And the one thing I would say, and I'm sure people are asking, well, who are the good players that the model misses? Because it can't be perfect. Why don't you share that with the people? And you know, we talked about after they missed, or that the model sort of misses them, we said, well, we can't solve for player X. You know, we can't go back and say, well, how do we get player X to be better in the model? It just have to be okay with outliers.
Yeah, and I think that's probably the most important thing that I'd also just really want to hammer home to the listeners out here, is we did not try and finesse this thing, right? The last thing you want to do is finesse this to fit a bias that you have, right? Because there's no point of building a model to fit a bias that you've had, right? So that's one thing. And you know, that a lot of times that's called overfitting a model, right? Is fitting it to the point where you're like, well, this thing's perfect. Because if a model's perfect, then it's not a model that you want to be using, frankly. So some of the guys, right, I think we've kind of talked about that 65 range is the cutoff, right? We're typically seeing a lot of, you know, a lot of the hits above that number. So a couple of the guys that are right on there, Deebo Samuel and Michael Pittman, obviously in retrospect, you know, maybe we would have liked them a little bit higher, but them still clearing that 65 threshold feels pretty good. There's really, Jax, there's three guys kind of below that. And it's, you know, if you start with, this is kind of where it goes back to some of the contested catch stuff that we really didn't have as much information in back in, you know, the 2018 and 2019 draft classes. But the first of those three guys is DJ Moore. So he comes in at a 63.1. And Jax, I know that was a topic of conversation for us as we kind of started to go through this, right?
Right. Oh, no. DJ Moore was a big one for me because I felt like he was so good. And I think a lot of the data that we would have had on him when he was playing would have probably elevated him. Who knows how much, but I think it's for sure would have elevated him if I had a guess. You know, I don't think he was exactly a contested catch player. So I think that sort of some of the metrics that we were unavailable for him at that time, I think would have helped him for sure.
Yep, absolutely. And then the other two guys, you know, really when you think about who's been an impact wide receiver from a fantasy perspective, is the two big ones, Terry McLaurin and DK Metcalf, right? Yeah. So DK is just one of those ones where as we went through it, and I think, you know, a lot of people that kind of have their own models or anything, we had to accept the fact that DK is one of those true outliers. Because when you look at his particular profile, Jax, I mean, it's just, he's not a guy that typically hit. And I think as we went through it, we said, all right, we're okay with somebody like him being an outlier.
Yes. Yeah, he was the one that's absolutely an outlier. And that's kind of what, you know, when we look at some of the players that profile like him in this upcoming class, there's a couple. And I would just ask, are they DK Metcalf is all I would say. And by that, I mean this physical freak who was injured, who had some, honestly, his injury also, you know, skewed his profile a little bit too, right? You know, it's like maybe Jamar Chase would have been the best player ever in the database if he played that, you know, the year he sat out. Who knows? You know, there's a lot of what ifs. Same thing with JSN. Who knows? Maybe he would have come down a bit. Maybe he would have had more target competition. Maybe JSN, you know. So missed time, you know, out of the model, which Some of these guys have the 2020 COVID year. There's some stuff there that can be tough, which is why, again, we did use some of the career numbers rather than, you know, single or best seasons, trying to get too cute with it. And I think by looking at it from a holistic approach, it really only missed a couple of players. I mean, you know, I guess you'd have missed on poor Gabe Davis and, you know, Cortland Sutton. But again, those are not gigantic hits. No, seriously, you know, because they would have been a little bit lower with this type of scoring. Maybe Romeo Dubs. Again, these are not huge hits. They're just some of the guys that fell a little bit below the line. But there's so many other guys down there. You're like, no, 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 no. Oh, look, Terry McLaurin. It's like, that's okay. You're okay with that.
Oh, absolutely. I think the only other guy that I'd want to give some sort of, you know, apology to as far as missing him, maybe, and you wouldn't have even missed him that first, is Christian Kirk, right? Like, I think he's found himself in Jacksonville, but to start, like, that's somebody that you wouldn't necessarily have missed out on. But again,
he wouldn't have been a contested catch guy. He would have absolutely not been that guy because, you know, he was also that, you know, sort of jitterbug slot guy. I mean, he was more than that, but he would have also, I think, had that. So that 2018 class, we almost want to throw it out a little bit, or if we could somehow go back in time and get some of this data so we could put it in place. Because a guy like DJ Chark scored ahead of Christian Kirk in that draft. And I think with the metrics that we're using today, I think that would have been flip-flopped.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, that's where you really start to see this, and we kind of discussed this as we were going through it, was you really start to see it get dialed in when we have all that contested catch data, really starting with that 2020 class, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and a guy like even Debo Samuel was injured. You know what I mean? So you start to look at things and you say, okay, well, he, you know, I'm okay with that. You know, so sometimes you're still going to take shots at these guys. It's not to say that nobody could ever succeed outside of a certain, you know, bucket. That's ridiculous. That doesn't even make any sense. It's just to say that we've identified the most, you know, telling things and put it into a model that is breathing life into us. And I absolutely love it. Now, I think we've kind of squeezed this a bit, but do you want to give the folks maybe just a little sneak peek into the 2024 class? Because this is when it gets, you know, pretty exciting.
Yeah. So obviously this class has been touted, you know, I think whether after you had guys set the combine ablaze, like, you know, Xavier Worthy, there's some size speed freaks in here. I think everywhere you look on Twitter, everybody's talking about the depth of this class and everything like that. I do think there's some high end talent in this class. There's no doubt about it. I do wonder if it's as deep as others say, at least from what our model is telling us sort of perspective. Jax, I'm not sure if you'd kind of agree there.
Totally. Totally, totally. Yeah. I mean, you know, we don't have all the draft capital in. We're only using projected draft capital. And so, you know, if a guy like Adonai Mitchell goes in the top 10, you know, it changes. If he goes outside of day two and to day three, it's like it changes, you know. So we don't exactly know where guys are going to land. But I would say that, you know, when we talk about are there any guys who are going to land above that 90, it's really two guys. And it's Malik Nabers and Marvin Harrison Jr. And they absolutely crush it up there. They kind of get there in different ways, which is kind of interesting because we've been talking all year about, you know, whether or not these two guys are, which one's better. And they score the exact same in the model. 91.9, which puts them right behind the big three and ahead of JSN. So they'd be right there. And I think that's about where they're getting drafted in Dynasty right now. I mean, they're right there. So these guys are the type of tier one assets. There's going to be really, I mean, there's probably going to be one guy who finishes with an 80 score. And it's not anybody that you guys think it's going to be. That's the only thing I'll tell you.
Yeah, it's, I think that's probably going to surprise some people, you know, not having this certain individual over that 80 score. But I think kind of going back to what you said about Nabers and Harrison, Jax, was when you look at kind of and think about everything that we talked about that was in the model kind of previously, right? Whether it be yak per receptions, first downs per route run, you know, yards per route run versus man or zone, whatever. Jax kind of outlined it that they get there in different ways. But I think this speaks to how agnostic the model has been, because while they get there in completely different ways, and these, like, when you look at a yards after catch perspective, Nabers is far and away better than Harrison, right? But the fact that they end up with the same score speaks to the fact that we're not overweighting one thing in particular, right? Like we're saying, look, you can be fucking bad at one thing, which look, Marvin Harrison Jr. is not really good at yards after the catch, but we're not going to crush you for that. Right. And I think that's one thing we're seeing it come together and seeing that like, we're not murdering guys for one poor aspect of their score, but they're also able to come in well overalls is something that was really exciting to see.
Absolutely. And there's some surprises. I think, I really like the way that the model ranks these guys. I think I kind of see what it's saying. We're going to wait to kind of release all of this. We're certainly going to post draft. We're going to have it offered up. So we're going to offer it up. Not sure how, not sure what, but it's going to be offered up post draft and keep an eye on, our Twitter accounts, but also the Undroppables Twitter account, as it's going to be dropping some nuggets and we'll be offering this up. You know, obviously our patrons will get, you know, first look at it. We'll get first opportunity at it. That's going to be exciting. We're going to have conversations, you know, sort of behind the scenes with our patrons about some of the things we see pre-draft. That's going to be fun. And it just adds another layer to the conversation about these prospects, because ultimately we keep talking about the same things. Oh, Brian Thomas is big and fast, scored a lot of touchdowns early, declare. Well, what else do we see? We see some other things, and we're not so sure where Brian Thomas is going to end up in this model post-draft. Well, we're pretty sure, but we're not going to tell you. Right? You know, yeah. And it's like, right? So, I mean, at the end of the day, there's a lot of these things that we have to try and figure out, and it's going to be a whole lot of fun to do so. And there is a little bit of a middle class in this class as you look at it. A lot of guys right in that 60 range, which they're coin flips, right? They're coin flips, which is what's pretty exciting about this is there's some coin flips out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things, you know, as far as Jack's saying, keep an eye on, you know, kind of what we're going to be doing here at the Undroppables. I think one of the things that's going to be really fun is leading up to the draft, we're going to be releasing some of those past historical scores, right? And so keep an eye out for some of that so you guys can see some of the breakdown of kind of those, how those past years went, so you guys can digest them a little bit more, you know, just from a visual perspective. But that's one thing that, you know, we're really excited to release with you guys as well, and some nice teasers to get you guys ready for the 2024 class.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing that I like now is that we can do a little bit of comps. You know, we can say, yeah, this player, not only comps score-wise, but also sometimes it's like, you know, there's some comps in the score. We started running some comps, just not comps like, oh, these two players play like each other. Just comps like they scored so similarly in so many different metrics, right? And wow, they scored so similarly. They're most similar. Well, sometimes they can be like, you know, I'm making this up, but like Rondale Moore and DK Metcalf, they didn't, but I'm just saying like, oh, wow, they're very, very different types of players, yet they scored similarly. Other times it's like, whatever, I'm making this up too. N'Keal Harry and Terrace Marshall or something, you're like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. You know, so some of these comps started to make a lot of sense, and a lot of them do. I mean, Rashee Rice and like Amon-Ra were like, oh, shit.
That,
you know, we're like,
that was a fun one.
Right? You know, you're like, wow, okay. So, again, not saying that Rashi is going to be Amon-Ra. It's just to say that, hey, he might be a little bit closer to that type of player than we're starting to give him credit for. And I saw someone else. It was kind of interesting because I think it was Debro maybe. I don't mean to misappropriate the comp, but someone did comp him. Oh, was it Ben Gretsch maybe on Rotoviz?
I think it might have been him, but I think I have seen Debro throw that out there as well.
In any event, it's not a big deal. I mean, we invented that comp, actually. We invented it. Thanks for them for using it. I'm glad to see them using that comp. It's really really fun to watch. No, but I saw them using it, and it was kind of cool because they were doing it as like looking at it from year one, where Rashi was slow to start and then had some really big weeks down the stretch,
yeah,
a little bit closer to the line of scrimmage. They made that comparison from play style in year one. And then when we looked at it, we're like, oh, shit, the prospect model thought they were pretty close too. Yeah. So we love that. You know, sometimes when you see that sort of stuff, it starts to make a little bit more sense. And maybe that's a good take, you know?
Yeah, well, I think it's something that also I think has already started to make me a little bit better of a, let's call it dynasty players, right? Because if you've kind of been following me on Twitter for a little bit, I've had doubts about Rashee's production profile in the NFL. Right. And is it something that's, you know, as sustainable? But this definitely has opened my eyes a little bit to like, look, not even taking into account the success that he had in the NFL his rookie year, which was absolutely fucking legitimate. Yes. From a, like you said, from a prospect perspective, there's a lot of similarities to Amon-Ra because that was his highest rated comp, right? So like for like from a percentile match perspective. So I think that's right. Cool, right? Is as you see these guys continue to grow and you start to, this is going to help us build out trade targets. This is going to help us build out, you know, guys who to build and how to build a roster and everything like that. So it's another, the comp thing's another thing to be excited about as far as some of the tools that we're, you know, trying to put together for some of the listeners here.
Yeah, and I will say we're going to have a pretty clear top five or six in this draft.
Yeah.
I think it goes without saying. And a sleeper seven, maybe. I think, you know, I can't wait to talk about sleeper seven. You know, sleeper seven is going to be somebody that I really want to talk about. And I'm going to dive in and do some film work. But let's just say that, you know, there's a player out there that we're going to start to tout potentially. I just need to do a little bit more work, but my gosh, it's so exciting to see this stuff. We want to make this stuff available to you, so we're going to. So that's it, man. I don't know. I'm so freaking excited. I don't know what to do with my arms.
Oh, I mean, look, after feeling like we've been in a cave here the last couple months, seeing kind of the fruits of this labor kind of bear out a little bit here, Jax, I'm really excited for the people to check out what we've been working on.
Last week I said to Danny, I was, you know, in my bathing suit and, you know, had the bathrobe on. I was afraid to take it off. Now I'm like fucking dancing on the pole. You know, I'm out there just, I'm excited.
You've got a Speedo on now.
I want everybody to see,
yeah.
You know, look at this, you know, I'm just, I'm strutting. I don't know what to do. It's so exciting. It's so much fun. You know, I want to say thanks to Jay, the coder, FF Coder again. I want to say thanks to you, Dan Wisner, the Wiz. And of course, Chalk, you know, we put in a lot of time. You guys put in a ton of time. It was a vision that we're pretty happy to see. And whatever, we probably spent a little bit too much time on one pod just talking about it. But fuck it, we felt like it. And I think probably y'all liked it. I don't know. I want to talk about like Jerry Jeudy right now. Because he's like 25 or something. How old is Jerry Jeudy right now?
I think he's 25.
He is still available in the 10th round of a startup right now. And I'm next, and I'm going to pick him. You know,
interesting. It's
like 10.6. Yeah, 10.06. If or whoever the fuck's in, we're not live, you can't hear me. But yeah, I'm going to take him. And it's like, it's crazy. Yeah, I mean, just to give you an idea, Keenan Allen, Christian Watson, Josh Downs, Marquise Brown, Amari Cooper, all the guys before him, and who's the wide receivers on the board right now? Like Cortland Sutton, Jameson Williams, Jahan Dotson, DeAndre Hopkins, Jacoby Myers, Tyler Lockett. Do you like him better than any of those guys? All those guys?
Say those last couple.
Cortland Sutton, Jameson Williams, no. Jahan Dotson, DeAndre Hopkins, Jacoby Myers, Mike Williams. Like, who do you like out of that? Put Jeudy in there.
I mean, look, if you're going to take a flyer, because, like, at least for this year, he's probably the wide receiver two on that team, definitely with Cooper there, right? And, like, does he get enough targets to make an impact this year with Elijah Moore and Njoku there? Like, probably not. So, like, you're hoping that the hope is long-term that they let Elijah Moore go, and when is Amari's contract up, right? Because if he's going to be the wide receiver two there, then or wide receiver 2/3, then look, I kind of like him, but I don't know how much value he would have in that role. To me, if you're at that point, if you're at that point where you're taking a flyer on a guy, do you just keep your eggs in the Jameson Williams basket and hope that he fucking figures it out? Like, because I will say he's different when he has the ball in his hands. It's just he needs to get the ball in his hands more.
So Jameson Williams, Quentin Johnston, Marvin Mims, who do you like?
It feels like the Mims stuff is going to happen to a certain degree. They traded Jeudy, I think, for it to happen a little bit. And he's above the 65. I mean, so is Jeudy. But like the thing is, there's nobody really there to compete with now. Like I know Cortland Sutton's there, but like if Russell Wilson isn't going to be throwing jump balls to Cortland Sutton, he's not going to be earning fucking targets. Like, I really think they're going to make a concerted effort to get Mims the ball. Because, like, it's not like Mims was drafted by a different regime. Like, Peyton traded up for this guy and fucking drafted him. Like, unless he is a complete, like, they're going to try to do it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's pretty interesting when you talk about Jeudy in that realm. Like, he's still young, and he got $41 million guaranteed. Like,
I know. It's a lot.
He has, like, a three-year 53 with $41 million guaranteed.
I know. I mean, look, the thing is, like, some of the play-action stuff with him is, like, really encouraging. Now, Van Pelt just left there, right? So is Stefanski taking over play-calling duties? Like, I mean, if that's the case, then he does kind of – he branches off of that tree a little bit, right? Because there was a time where, like, him and Shanahan, like, were kind – they kind of, like, commingled a little bit.
Yeah.
And if that's the case and they emphasize play action a little bit more, then like, then Judy's probably got a chance to pop a bit more, because from a play action perspective, I think, you know, I saw something that Ryan actually posted earlier was from a yards per route or from a first downs per route run perspective. I think Judy was like eighth in first downs per route run on play action. And he was third in overall yards per route run. So like if Cleveland makes the play action more of an emphasis than say Denver did, then he's probably got more of a chance to make an impact.
There you go.
It's a lot of money, man.
A lot of money to give a player. I think Jerry Judy's a guy that we should be considering, is all I'm saying, at his current value. I think he's completely forgotten. And he's going in a place where it's either these sort of never-seen-it-before young guys, you know, that, hey, I'm hoping, maybe, or older players that, you know, Mike Williams and guys like that, that might have production. I mean, DeAndre Hopkins should be productive, but he's 31. Like, how many more years of that you got? So Jerry Judy, one of the reasons that I asked about him is because he was so high in the model. And it's like, well, yeah, he just got money and he's high on the model. Maybe there's something of a second, you know, sort of half of his career renaissance when he's not old. You know, he's still young. He's still like, you know, CeeDee Lamb's age. You know, I mean, he's still young.
He's young. Yeah.
So I think there's something to be said about that. The other guy I was asked about on Theo's show that I'd love to hear your opinion on is Deontay Johnson. Deontay Johnson goes to Carolina to be the alpha. I forgot about Jonathan Mingo. Sorry. he goes to be the alpha in Carolina for Bryce Young, who showed that he can lock on to a slot guy in Adam Thielen. Now he gets one of the most elite target earners in the NFL, who was also a pretty good score in our model, toot toot. But what do you think about Deontay Johnson in Carolina?
So I am a big believer in, look, I'm not saying it's going to happen overnight, but I think what Canales has done with some of the quarterback stuff is super fucking encouraging. And one of the things that it seems like they're trying to do, like with the Robert Hunt signing, is really build out that offensive line for Bryce Young to have some more time to go through his progressions and, you know, just more time to get the ball off, right? And if that's the case, somebody like Deontay Johnson, who, like, look, he may not be, like, a true wide receiver one or anything like that, but there's no doubt that, like, he is one of the better separators in the NFL. I think looking at you know, Harmon recently, just shout out Matt Harmon to his recent reception perception that he just released on Deontay, who, look, while it may not have shown it because of some of the quarterback play there in Pittsburgh, I think really had another strong 2023 from a separation standpoint. So I, from a straight up what he should earn from a volume perspective, I'm like buying Deontay Johnson right now.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you.
Yeah.
All right, last one, and I'll let you out on this one.
Sure.
You're in a startup. Straight up. Who do you prefer? T. Higgins or George Pickens in Dynasty?
Oh, my God.
It's a great question, isn't it?
It's a really good question. So, and it... Where I'm leaning, the answer might surprise some people, because George Pickens has been another one where I've kind of questioned his sustainability, as far as, because he's been such this big play merchant, right? Where he has these boom weeks that will absolutely win you weeks. Like best ball, he's been fucking outstanding. But T. Higgins has always been this guy that, like, he's basically like, if the hot girl says yes to you, it says yes to you if you go to the prom, and then she goes with you a couple years in a row, but at the end of the night, she said, oh, I had so much fun, and you still don't get to go home with her, right? She never fulfills kind of your hopes and dreams of, like, what you think he could be.
And that's just what... I found a show title, T. Higgins' Bad Prom Date, or, you know, I mean, we're dancing on the... Go ahead, continue your thought.
And look, it, and maybe... that happens next year, right? Because they franchised him this year, so they can only keep him really for that one more year. Does he really have a chance to, and he came into the league at so young, so I think Jack's what, next year he'd leave and be 26. The problem that I have is I probably would have gone George Pickens if the Steelers did not just bring in Arthur Smith. It's tough for me to, we just complained for 2 years about how Drake London was essentially in wide receiver jail with a below average quarterback and Arthur Smith. And I've seen all these people on Twitter now saying, well, Deontay Johnson's traded, now George Pickens to the moon. I'm not sure if everybody fucking remembers that, like, Arthur Smith was just there and put Drake London in jail, and now George Pickens might be in Arthur Smith jail.
It's possible.
I think, gun to my head, I'm still taking Higgins, but the answer is a lot fucking closer than it would have been even 2 months ago.
Yeah, I'm with you. George Pickens, look, T. Higgins has never seen more than 110 targets in his career. You know, he tops out at 110. That's not good enough in that offense. Now, maybe he gets traded. Maybe something happens. I mean, he's on the franchise tag. Doesn't sound like he wants to sign with them yet. He signs there. It's not very. I want to see him go somewhere else so he can be the alpha. You know, just because he's sort of shadowed behind, behind Jamar Chase, and then. Yeah, George Pickens gets the clear runway, but he gets the clear runway into the Drake London role, as you point out, which I think is, you know, just sort of serendipitous and just a mind fuck, because you're trying to figure out which one of these two things is the best thing. He's been really good on a per target and per play basis, though, has George Pickens.
Yeah.
You know, he only had 106 targets last year and really paid off. Over 1,100 yards, I believe. Like, really, really good on a per target basis last year. Over 10 yards per target. Really, really good. So, you know, when you see production like that, and then you just say, okay, well, maybe the efficiency stays, because it's not like the offense was very efficient. He was so much more efficient than everybody else in that offense that maybe he's the alpha. I mean, he did come from alpha. He has alpha blood in him. You know, he sort of had a circuitous. I've already used that word today. That's a different word. Circuitous. He had to go around the barn, but he did. He had a circuitous path to the NFL, and when he got there, he was finally a second round pick. But when he was a freshman, he was going to be a sure first round pick, top of the first round pick in the NFL. So George Pickens has that in him as well. I'm excited to see what happens in Pittsburgh. I think they're going to run the ball 75 times a game, though.
See, that's the other thing. It's not like they don't have two good running backs either, right? Like, you can call Najee what he wants, but he's good enough where he's still going to get volume, right? Like, and Tomlin's going to give him volume. And Jaylen Warren is one of probably the most RB2 fantasy darlings, or potential fantasy darlings, out there from an efficiency standpoint, right? Yeah. So, like, I think Arthur Smith having those two guys to rely on. And then you got to mention the fact that he's probably going to run jet sweeps for, you know, Cam Hayward four times a game.
Absolutely.
But
got to squeeze those in.
Yeah. So it's close, but I'll take Higgins.
All right, bro. All right, man. So, you know, this is it. We did it. We unveiled it to the world. How do you feel after showing some skin?
Oh, it feels good to show some skin after a little while. I feel like I was this pasty little girl, and now I'm at the beach getting my sun burnt a little bit.
Absolutely.
So hopefully, you know, as this comes out and people digest it, you know, people kind of appreciate some of the work that we've put into it. And I'm excited for it to start some conversations, you know, kind of amongst everyone checking out our stuff. So, you know, guys, hope you enjoy it. And Jax, thanks for having me on today, man. It was a lot of fun to talk through this with you.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to sort of tweet out some of the past classes and what, you know, what that all looks like. And, you know, like I said, one final thing I will say just about model versus rankings is, like, look, the model is not designed to tell you exactly everything. So take that always with a grain of salt. If our rankings may deviate, and I know, you know, one of the people that we really look up to in this space is Scott Barrett, who does an amazing job, who I'm going to have on the pod at some point here this offseason, hopefully sooner rather than later. But, you know, he's been doing this type of modeling stuff for quite some time, and his model was awesome last year. And, you know, I think he had Marvin Mims at wide receiver 2 in the model. And, you know, he sort of said, that doesn't mean that's where I'm going to rank him, but that's where he is right now. You know what I mean? And I respected that. And I think I learned something from him at that time, which was, you know, just lean into what you're seeing and then make decisions as you go along. And that's what we intend to do. We intend to use this as a tool so that we can make better decisions going forward, given the information that it spits back at us. So that's the key to it all. And holy shit, is this stuff fun, huh?
Yeah, it was a blast putting this together. And again, I think you kind of phrased it up well there, Jax. Another piece of information to arm yourself with to make an educated guess, because at the end of the day, we're guessing on these guys, right?
So. Sir. Yes, sir. Well, thanks for coming on. You're awesome. The people do love you, by the way. Huh? I mean,
appreciate that.
They love you. They love the Wiz. I mean, you got the cool name. You got the cool sunglasses on there now and the Twitter thing. Yeah. And hey, yeah. Man, you know, we spruced you up. You came in, you were dirty. We cleaned you up, put a suit on you and sent you out there to the world, you know? Yeah, the Undroppables. We clean you up and we get you going. But thanks,
no,
man.
It's been a blast getting to do this stuff with you, Jack. So kind of getting the feet wet more on the pod side has been fun. And, you know, from a listener perspective, hopefully you guys enjoy it.
By the way, also, you're doing a great show. I'll tell people where to find it. The Patriots show. So if you're a Patriots fan, or if you're not a Patriots fan, you can just listen and fucking hate these two guys because they're both named Dan and they do this Patriots show. But that's another thing to mention. I do want to shout out Abe, who's done an amazing job of getting all the team specific stuff going for the Undroppables. Those are all found on YouTube. Yeah. So, you know, their pods, the Undroppables podcast feed, the Undroppables YouTube has team specific. As many as we can get, we're going to do. We've got Jets, we've got Steelers, we've got, you know, Patriots. We've got a lot of teams, Raiders, of course.
Raiders.
Team specific shows for you to just, you know, listen and, you know, you're a fan of a team, how can you not listen to that shit? I love that stuff. Can't get enough, you know, talk about your own team. That's all on there. And the YouTube page with a lot of clips of this show and many others. So go check it out. Follow us, like, subscribe, do whatever the hell you got to do to make us awesome. We appreciate y'all, and we'll see you next time. So on behalf of everybody here at The Undrafted, on behalf of everybody here at The Undroppables, on behalf of the greatest podcast producer the world has ever known, Mr. Michael P. Duncan. You have been joined by the Wiz. I am Jax Falcone, and we